Everyone, and welcome back to the second last of our Clubs and Days series. Today we are discussing the Brisbane Lions, the runner-up from last year's grand final. And to join me, I have Liam. Liam, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Feels weird that I'm doing my last club preview of the preseason. I swear it creeps up on me every season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's such a monumental task getting through all 18 teams. So they come quickly.
Ah, well, let's talk one of the league's best teams. Let's talk Brisbane. Mm. They were a surprisingly poor team to start last year, and I'd say that was the first thing that kind of shocked us. They dropped 3 of their first 5 games, albeit teams that would go on to be very prominent in the final series, so Hawthorn, Carlton, and Melbourne. But after that point, it was 9 straight wins. It was a very impressive effort. It was not until the grand final loss to North Melbourne that they really got, you know, tested all that much after that round, that first 5-game stretch where they really did underperform. So it certainly wasn't the best home and away season for Brisbane, but it was a truly spectacular run after that point.
Yeah, I feel like it really was. They kind of became a litmus test early in the season where it was when Hawthorn beat Brisbane, I was going, oh my Lord, the Hawks are going to be fantastic this year. And then when Carlton did it a couple of weeks later, it's going, oh, Carlton's just destroyed the Lions. Is this the reckoning of Carlton? Because the Lions for so long have just been this, you know, constant performing team. And I suppose anyone who can beat them, you just believe in them being contenders.
There was also a case of maybe the new game style was going to hurt Brisbane as much as it was clearly hurting Adelaide. Mm. Particularly after the Carlton loss, who at that point had not shown a massive amount in the early games. They hadn't played particularly exciting football. They hadn't won big at any stage. They hadn't kicked a big score. But it was, okay, maybe Brisbane are stuffed and they've just allowed the Carlton to do this from nowhere. Turned out the Carlton's a pretty good side and had really just nailed how to operate in the new higher speed, more transition-based footy. And I think that's what we saw from Brisbane. They really amended their game style. They looked to consolidate their centre bounce crew. They moved away from some of their bigger bodies towards faster options that we'll definitely be talking about later. And it's from that point onwards that they really accelerated. It's kind of hard, though, to talk about what Brisbane's going to be like this year without talking about who's out. And that's Taylor Smith. After her breakout a few seasons ago, league-leading goal scorer, her trade to Sydney is a huge loss. And, you know, Brisbane have shown themselves to be capable of responding from huge losses. They won a premiership after losing Jesse Tafia-Wardlaw. That's an incredibly impressive effort, so there's nothing to stop them from doing it again this time. But it's going to be a big hole to try and fill in their forward 50. And another player that they are also going to have to replace inside their forward line is Ellie Hampson, who after 3 seasons at Brisbane and her entire career in Queensland, she has now moved to Port Adelaide. Another key player that has also gone out the door, probably for some more consistent game time, is Poppy Bolts, who was nonetheless a very important swing option forward defender for the Lions across the last few seasons. Coming in, they didn't really add anyone of substantial note, no major free agents. The biggest existing name that's come across was Lily Rose Williamson, ex-Essendon Bomber, and who spent last season as an injury replacement player at Collingwood. They also had probably one of their biggest draft crops, albeit not with a number of them very high in the draft, but they certainly did have 4 players, which is not the case that they've had for a number of seasons now. So I think that, well, I was about to say now, let's kind of throw to the interview, but I think it's worthwhile also noting that they did lose their midfield coach for the second time in 3 seasons. After a certain pesky Hawthorn side poached the last midfield coach, in comes the replacement, Ryan Davis, who is now also being shipped out the door and joined as Adelaide's head coach. It stands to reason that Craig Starshevich can, you know, perform more than well enough whilst that coaching turnover happens, but maybe this is the one that finally breaks his camel's back.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to have to replace, but as you say, Craig Starshevich seems to be, you know, such a reliable coach's coach, I guess, and someone that's, I think all coaches in the league would probably aspire to have, given their, you know, continued success.
Agreed. But,
yeah, but hey, let's. I think when we're talking the Lions, it's always best to hear it straight from the Lions' mouth. And to that end, we have Bell Dawes joining us today, chatting with our co-host Willow. Let's throw across to that now.
We are very, very lucky to be joined by Brisbane superstar Bell Dawes today. Bell, how's it going?
Woo! Very good. Just finished a good gym session, so I've got a pump going on. Had a look in the mirror and it looks pretty good. So, no, all up and about.
Absolutely brilliant. We're so thrilled to have you on. And it was another great season by the Lions, but I do have to address the elephant in the room first, which is you did ultimately fall short for the second year running. How's the group sort of addressed that? Because I'm guessing 1 year is a bit disappointing. The second year, it probably starts to get a bit annoying. So what have you said sort of internally to push into the new season?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, lost more grand finals now than I've won, which sucks, but you just got to give credit where credit's due, and North are an amazing team. And if anything, it's just they've set the bar. It's like, how can we get there? How can we be better? You know, they've almost just shown us how it can be done. They're so clean. And I think it just it excites us. And, you know, we don't reflect on it too much. You know, we've got a new group, a bunch of new draftees who just have this crazy energy. And, yeah, I think it just it raises the bar, and we're just going to meet that bar or even exceed it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you obviously do have the 2023 flag to look back on, so hopefully you'll be returning to those heights this year.
Oh, definitely. I just want to feel that feeling again. And, you know, it's you look at the future, you know, preseason, practice games, round one, you know, finals, but the best part of it is the moments every day with the team. So I'm really just trying to enjoy that at the moment. But that is why we play. We want to win a premiership. And, yeah, definitely eyes on the prize, but enjoying the everyday.
Oh, fantastic. And even though it is a team game, you yourself have had a fantastic individual season. Last year, you won the best and fairest. You're in the All-Australian squad. What do you attribute that personal growth to?
Oh, definitely, you know, I don't want to be cliche, but the people around me. I had a really good midfield coach last year, Ryan Davis, who just helped me, you know, grow the game with my footy IQ, and our strength and conditioning program is amazing. Our S&Cs, like, they keep us on the park, and our medical team, like, I'm just constantly learning. I think it was a few years ago, you know that learning curve? The more you learn, the more you learn you don't know. So I'm just in that journey at the moment and just, yeah, trying to grow in every area I can. I love it. So, yeah, the ceiling, there is no ceiling. So I'm not done yet. So get excited.
Very excited. And you've had some fantastic midfielders to work alongside. Ellie Anderson, of course, W Award winner, Kathy Spark as well. Mm-hmm. It's been a very stable midfield group, those two have been alongside you for quite a bit. So how's it been working with them? And is there anyone looking to sort of push their way into your little trio?
Yeah, definitely. I think every year, you know, we just have such a competitive team and people pushing. But this year, to a whole new degree, like the young ones coming through, Marlo Graham, she's been amazing. She's just like picked up AFLW so quickly, like the speed and the contact, and yeah, she's awesome. But definitely playing with Ali and Kathy, I've noticed just how much we rely on our eyes. You know, we look at each other, we know what each other are doing, and just starting to share that among the group of, you know, how we do it. And it's been really fun this year. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And a player that we were quite interested in coming to the club was Lily Rose Williamson. Yep. Went from being an injury replacement player to being traded to the Lions. How's she settled in? We've described her a bit as Bell Dawsey, to be honest. So
yeah, no, I definitely have seen just a little bit of myself in her. I forget she's 21, but she's full of energy, let me tell you that. And she was like, I think when we finished drill, she's running around high-fiving everyone still. We're like, damn, this girl's got some energy, but she's definitely brought in a lot of like physicality at training as well. And I think it's, you can see how different teams train, because there's things she's doing here and we're like, whoa, we love that here, you know, like you can get aggressive. And we love it. So it's been good to see her. She's been a really great addition. And we had a practice game on the weekend and she just carved up, which was great to see.
Another player who has rolled through that midfield is your skipper, Bree Conan. Mm-hmm. But with the departure of Poppy Bolts, and you've now got, of course, plenty of new midfielders, is that a signal that she may be settling back into the back line?
Yeah, I feel like Bree, you just never know. Like, she can just, if we need a spark, bring her in. Bring her in. I think there was a game in Tassie 2 years ago. They put her in the midfield just because we needed something. And she kicked a goal. She got a clearance. It was awesome. I remember the celebration. I've jumped on her back like a pig jack. Like, here comes the captain. She's going to lead us. But you do have your Charlie Mullins as well, who rolls in there. And she gets better and better each year. And, you know, not many people are talking about her. So I think we've got a really good young group coming through who you might be seeing in there.
I'm really glad you say that not many people are talking about Charlie Mullins, because we have talked about Charlie Mullins so much on this podcast. She is absolutely one of our favorites. So I'm so glad to hear that.
Charlie Mullins is a gun.
I completely agree with that. But yeah, the defense was humming last season. And I mean, the emergence of Jen Dunn was probably one of the most exciting things. All Australian. It must be fantastic to know that you can just, you know, pull out players and they become superstars like that.
100%. We always joke as well how our defense is a bit smaller than I guess the average team, but they just have this unmeasured inch that they can just pull out, I guess, and they can stop tall players, they can run, they're physical, reliable. But yeah, you very rarely see Jen Dunn get beat. And if she does, she'll be thinking about it all week and want to redeem herself the next game.
I guess one of the big things in the off season was he did lose a bit of goal kicking power. Tay Smith, obviously, league leading goal kicker, and also Ellie Hampson. I guess, how is the forward line shaping up with those holes? I suppose you've obviously got a lot of firepower regardless, but how have you been looking to, I guess, replace those players or at least fill the void that they've left?
Yeah, I think as well, if you look at our efficiency last year, it wasn't the best with our scoring.
Mm.
Coming from a few middies, maybe a few other forwards, don't know who exactly, but I think we're just working on, when we take our shot, how can we get, high percentage shots? How can we make them? So we've been doing a lot of work on that. We had a practice game on the weekend against Swans. We had 11 different goal scorers. So just getting different people, getting different looks, and just making sure of them. Because, I reckon we had a lot of shots but didn't make them. But, I reckon Dax will still be stepping up in that forward line as well, minus Tay. But, I think a lot of people will be stepping up and hitting their goals, hopefully.
I was quite interested, actually, because you didn't kick a single goal last season in what was arguably...
Don't remind me that. I think I kicked 8 behinds.
Ooh. So lots of goal-kicking practice?
I've been practicing.
Brilliant.
I've been practicing, and, I want to see some this year, because to be a damaging mid, you need to hit the scoreboard. So I'll be looking to hit that scoreboard this year.
Absolutely. And I think another player who was quite damaging in the forward half was, speaking of Irish players, Nisa Dooley. 10 goals in her first season. Is she one of those players that could really fill that void and kick goals? 10 of them is better than 8 behinds, I hear.
Yeah, if you think Nessa Dooley, she's a unicorn. She's a freak in the forward line. Left foot, right foot. I don't even know how she's holding this ball, but she can just bend it between the goals. And it is very hard to defend. She's done a couple of me this preseason. But yes, very good. I call her the Loch Ness Monster when she starts to win those things. I think that's Scottish or something.
It is Scottish, but I think it's still pretty good. It's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still pretty good. But she can do some cool stuff with the ball and just make it bend. It's not that shape over there in Ireland, but she can do it here.
I mean, from the sounds of it, you might need to ask her how to hold the ball and you can hopefully kick goals that way.
Oh, she gave me some tips the other day. She was telling me something about my hips and leg, and I did it straight away. And she goes, "There you go." I can't do her accent. So she's trying to teach us.
You can probably do a Scottish accent instead, I guess. But
I'm not even going to try for you right now, but thank you.
Another player who we love here, who we have interviewed in the past, is Sophie Conway. You've got some fantastic wingers in her and Ola O'Dwyer. But you've got some younger players such as Evie Long who have shone through that area last year. So, or previously, Sophie was very keen not to give away her spot to other players. But how have those wing spots been shaping this preseason? Is Sophie getting a bit of a run for her money?
Yeah, I think as well, I think everyone's a bit versatile in where they can play. And, you do see these new young players coming up. It's like, how? I feel bad for Craig. Like, how can you fit everyone in and make the team? And you do have players like Sophie who could play forward, who could play mid. And you've also got her really helping coach these young ones, Sophie Peters coming through, Evie Long, and Orla as well. really just, yeah, it's awesome to see them all coach because they have been our prime wing players for the last few years. So it's good to watch them coach, but they are very good at it. So I don't know if you want to move them. That's just my personal opinion. But yeah.
I think that's fair enough. Letting them do their things probably really important. We might leave it there, but the question that we love asking to finish up is, which player's been tearing up the track so far this preseason? Who set for a massive breakout year in 2026?
I said it at the start, Marlo Graham, absolute gun, sponge, absorbs as much as she can, ask questions, and she's elite on the track. She got me holding the ball in our injury club. Oh, I saw red. She's awesome. So she's one to look for. Yeah, and there's a lot of others, but I'll go her.
Oh, that's a brilliant tip. Beldors, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure and good luck for the season ahead.
Thanks for having me and good luck to everyone and their teams.
Jeez, I have to say, Liam, I think that was one of my favourite interviews that I've heard this preseason. Beldors, absolute star.
I knew what did you make of it? For a winner when she did the woo at the beginning and then was like, yep, I've been for a pump in the gym, just looked in the mirror, it looked great, like this is elite. I was like, oh, we are going to get some ripping answers. And funnily enough, like we really did. I really enjoyed the whole thing. I loved hearing a lot about what Belle Dawes is suddenly realizing, which is she is a veteran and, you know, coaching up players like Marlo Graham to see the game the way that she and Ellie Anderson does or do. Fascinating. I thought it was a high energy interview. Definitely appreciated, particularly when we are getting to the low energy stage of our content recording season. That was a shot of adrenaline, a real pick me up.
Yeah, absolutely. Very exciting to hear. And hey, talking about high energy players, we've definitely got one to start off your top five most relevant players at the Brisbane Lions. Who's your number one pick?
It is one of the podcast's favourite players and a player that I will say, alongside someone we'll talk about later, caught their revival after round five. It's Charlie Mullins. She will be a mid-forward this year, 690K priced at 64.3. Don't let that number fool you, though, that price, that figure. After she had an injury with low time on ground in round six, she moved into a very important high half forward, back of stoppage and CBA role. Elite scorer. After that injury, she averages 82, high score of 115, and only one score of sub 70, and that was against one of the most difficult teams to score well against in the Demons in a qualifying final. An absolute, you know, measure of consistency after she gets that role. She is an incredibly good tackler, good in short, across short spaces, an elite runner, an elite endurance player, a great kick. I'd say that amongst the league's high half forwards, you'd be hard-pressed to find more than two or three kicks better than Charlie Mullins. I thought she was elite. And I think that putting her at one is commensurate with the talent that she has and the ability for her to be a high 70s, possibly 80 averaging forward. But it's not to say that it's without questions, though.
Yeah, I mean, absolute star of our teams last year. And I think a lot of the coaches that jumped on early really rode Mullins all the way to success. It was a great pick in the back half of last season. But as you say, questions on the role, because it's the second season, I think, that we've seen Charlie Mullins perform better in the back half of the year. And I feel like that Lions core, their midfield core, is so, so strong, and they generally start the seasons with it. So I guess the question is, do you reckon Charlie Mullins is going to be pushing up into that stoppage role early in the season, or is it something that they might save again for the back half of the year?
It's a good question. It's one that I don't know if I have a good answer to, a really clear one. I'm leaning towards her being more likely to have that CBA role early, in part because I believe in Craig Starcevich's ability to accurately, or at least in my view, match my perception of the quality of players. The second tidbit, though, and it's something that Beldors talked about, not hearing a lot of Bree Conan training in the midfield. And that was something that in that first month of the season, it was really difficult to get a grasp. And I don't think Craig Starcevich really knew who their third and fourth rotating mids was. It was sometimes Bree Conan for a quarter here or there. It was a bit of Ellie Hampson. it felt very unstable. Cathy Spark was, you know, going up and down pretty wildly in terms of her time as a CBA player. And I just don't, I think it took him a month to realize that what they needed was more speed and less what would be traditionally considered like big bodied inside mids. Charlie Mullins was at the core of that. And her role in the preseason match, while she didn't score amazingly kind of under what she's priced at, it was not a ridiculously poor score. But importantly as well, there was a lot of options in that second half that were being rolled through the midfield. I personally got the sense that Charlie Mullins will be at least one-third CBA type player and will still be playing as a high half forward. But I think it's a fair question to ask if she's going to stay there enough to be value early in the year.
Yeah. No, I tend to agree with you. But look, she's not the only one who's trying to push in for some of that stoppage time. Another one here is your number two pick.
And it is Courtney Hodder. It was Mullins and Hodder that really reignited the season for the Brisbane Lions. Hodder, another mid forward, 838K. So priced 14 points higher than Mullins, which is why she does sit at second, albeit with the higher average. But much like Mullins, it was on her efforts in the back half of the season with some higher CBA percentages, had, you know, one game above 10% in the first four. And then it was a much more consistent CBA role through the back half of the home and away season that saw some really nice, there was a month, you know, 5 weeks there, 108, 84, 112, 96, 89, where Courtney Hodder alongside Mullins were the marking, tackling, goal scoring duo that really set this Brisbane team back on course. The only reason why she's second is that I just see there being less upside, you know, across that back end of the season. And if you remove a very difficult North game, she's probably, you know, got 4 points of upside compared to Mullins, where I feel like it could be closer to 15%. But I'd say that we've kind of seen Hodder now do this for two seasons, be a very important back end of the season, solid scoring pick, whereas Mullins has only done it for one. So there is a case to be made that Hodder is a safer option. Just don't know if she's got as much upside, but still, I suspect she will be amongst the top six or very, very close to it by the time we get to the end of the season.
Yeah. No, I think absolute superstar Courtney Hodder, and the Lions are very, very lucky to have her. My question, and this probably applies to Charlie Mullins as well, but I wanted to hold back until we discuss Courtney Hodder, because I think she is probably the bigger threat forward. With the departure of Taylor Smith, the structure of that forward line is a very, very interesting one to figure out. And Hodder can be so damaging around goals. Is it something that maybe she'll get held in that forward line a little bit more as a result?
It's eminently possible. And it's a reason, again, why I have a little bit less confidence in Hodder. But here's the thing. I think that she's played as a forward and still scored solidly enough. I just don't see that there being much upside if she does do that. I think last season was the midfield balance fact-finding month for Stasevic. I think it'll be the forward line and that structure with no Smith and Hampson for Stasevic this season. The advantage of Mullins is that I'd say that right now, she is a more, her second or tertiary position as a winger gives her some more flexibility and possibly still some upside, even if she doesn't have the ideal role, than Hodder, who is maybe if she's sitting as a deep forward and it is a very hotly contested game at the other end of the ground, who might miss out.
Yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting first month, and I agree that they'll absolutely experiment. And it could be that they're experimenting in games, because in that Geelong first, you know, practice game that we saw, I think Hodder was the real fire starter in that second quarter who gave them a lot of drive through that half forward line. So I think it's going to be an interesting one, and whether or not she is a starting pick is probably a bit high risk for my taste personally, but I can see why people want to do it. Let's jump across to your third pick though here, because I think this is also an interesting one in a very busy sort of bracket of underpriced midfield premiums.
Yeah, I think it's someone that we really haven't discussed. And I'd say that until doing research for this, probably wasn't going to get discussed. Belle Dawes, the person we interviewed, I think that her end of season form are indicative of the scorer that she could be. Priced at 78.5. By the time we get through finals, her full season average is 81.4, telling you that she really did jump up in the final series. But if you look at her final three games in the home and away season, got 100. Second half of the season, including finals, averages a hair over 90. It's giving her 13 points of upside, and she is only 25. And she's been someone that has threatened to break out for nearly as long as we've been doing this podcast. I feel like in our second season, I was talking about Belle d'Or season. And the problem that she's got is that she's not nearly as heralded or, as she talked about, quite the same goal scorer to get the plaudits that, like the Ella Roberts of, you know, that kind of midfielder might get who breaks out. Or we've talked a lot about Dowrick and Woodland, who are, again, probably more highly regarded players, often for what they do inside forward 50. Belle d'Ors can hit the scoreboard. It's more points there. It's clear that she's working on it. It's an RFI. But I think we already saw in the back half of that season, she put together multiple ceiling games, a 127, then a 124 in the grand final. I think that there's potentially an Elise Parker type scorer in Belle d'Ors. Not willing to pick it yet. It's tough to just go on a whim here and not have a really concrete reason outside of it looked like she improved a bit in the back end of last year. But I won't be shocked if we see Belle d'Ors, you know, her average starting with a 9 by the time we get to round 6, round 7.
Yeah, no, look, I really don't mind this pick at all because, honestly, she has been threatening to break out for such a long time and she's such a big game player. The only question mark, I guess, is that midfield rotation. We're talking about a lot of players that we want to run through there. But last season, she was their number one rotation through the midfield. It's hard to see her not getting significant minutes yet again. So, you know, I do like this pick a lot. And it's not too dissimilar to your pick number 4, who's also a midfielder with the Lions.
Yeah, it's Ali Anderson. And this is a different narrative. She was, last year was a down year by her standards. Again, it was off the back of a really slow start. So had averaged mid-90s and 100 before in 2023 and 2024. Last season, though, averaged 87, and I think her average, again, dropped a little bit in the final series. A lot of that comes down to that first month of the season, lower time on ground. She was someone that when the Brisbane Lions were losing badly, she was sitting out the fourth quarter. Once you remove, though, those first four rounds where we've talked at length now about it being a fact-finding period, Ali Anderson jumped back up into the 90s. She has previously been a 100 averaging midfielder. We know that she's extremely capable. It's another case of she will be relevant, I suspect, by the time we get through the season if she has a down score to begin the year, gets a little cheaper, or turns her form back into the 2024 version fantasy-wise. It's not someone I'm picking right now. It's a very congested price range, 940K, but it is someone we know is a premium scorer in the past.
Yeah, and looking back at that 2024 season, it's very interesting because in part I'm going, wow, the ceiling that she put up, I think she had that 160 early on in the season that really set her apart. You needed to have her early on. But then if you look at the rest of the season, it's kind of like, well, is the true reflection of Ali Anderson an 87 and the 160 just raises her up to the high average? Or is she a player that we're expecting to hit some of these higher scores more consistently?
I think that we're either going to get a Belle d'Ors breakout or a Ali Anderson return to the 100. I don't think we're going to get both. Right now, I'm thinking that what we saw at the back end of last year saw Belle d'Ors be the better scorer than Ali Anderson, and I think that's where the trends are going. But I, again, won't be shocked if it's inverted. I just don't think we're going to get both.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. It's going to be an interesting watch on that Brisbane midfield in the early rounds of the season, I think, particularly as they're trying to experiment with how they bring those forward players into it. So definitely a key one to watch. And your number 5 player is a very, very interesting one because I expect 0% midfield time whatsoever. But in terms of their impact forward, it could have a big say on how everyone else here floats through the midfield. Can you tell us a bit about pick number 5?
Marlo Graham, Belle d'Ors breakout player. A name that I'd only read a little bit about before hearing the Dawes interview. It just had me a little bit on alert during the practice match. And you look at her score, 37 points, 54% time on ground. But it's not often you see someone picked in the 30s in the last year's draft go out and have 13 disposals at Brisbane. Brisbane are not a team that throw their rookies in early. So personally, I think she is a player to watch. I don't think she's going to have midfield time early. I think she's just a name to keep an eye on. And yeah, she's someone that I'll be looking out for later in the year.
Yeah, honestly, that game in the practice game, she was honestly on fire in that first quarter. Her pressure that she was putting on in terms of her tackles, her smothers, just her ability to sort of bring an energy to that side that, quite frankly, no one else at Brisbane had brought in that first quarter. I think she's very, very likely to debut early, which is very exciting because that doesn't happen at the Lions, as you say.
Disappointing she's not a forward rookie, given she is at 200K. Mm. I would have loved a bit of forward status to be able to pick her. I think she sits down the pecking order in midfield rookies to pick. But to see her be such an energizer buddy, a bunny, accumulate well, get some decent meters gained, nearly 150 meters gained in only 50% time on ground. These are all very positive indicators. It's just tough when, like you said, I don't think she's a midfielder. I think she'll often get her time on ground managed when she plays for Brisbane. She feels like a pick for 2 to 3 years down the line, maybe with forward status when she becomes the new player in the midfielder.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Brisbane do love to run a couple of players at 30, 40% time on ground. And the other thing is that whilst I would say she was probably in the top three players on ground in the first quarter of that game against Geelong, she also just had the 14 fantasy points. I think it's a high impact role, not a fantasy accumulating one. So definitely one to bookmark, I suppose, for later seasons, but keep an eye on in case she does come out and debut with a big score. Well, I guess that brings us to the host special. And I have gone for a classic Lions pick here in Bree Conan. So last season, we were talking her up as a defender-listed player that was moving into the midfield, and she did for about three games. And in those three games, there was actually only the one where she was playing over 50% time in the middle. The rest of it was, you know, 20 to 30% and just pushing up, I suppose. It's really the majority of the year was spent in the back line in the end where they decided they didn't like it. And as a result, she averaged the 65.4, is priced a little over 700K. I do think when you look at the scores from last season, her midfield games are better than the rest of her season, but the difference is not particularly stark. You know, it's sort of averaging, you know, low 70s as opposed to low 60s. And there were also quite a few games in the back half of last season where, you know, she was quite interrupted. There were some injuries. There was some, you know, sort of managing hamstrings on low time on ground, that sort of a thing. It's one where I think a couple of those scores were a bit lower than in previous seasons. And I think this year, I don't think she's necessarily overpriced because of that start to the year where she was in the midfield. Mm. And look, we've talked a lot about their midfield mix. I don't think it's likely to happen particularly early in the season. But to rule out Bree Conan from returning to that midfield at some point during this season, to me, feels wrong. I think there's a good chance that she'll rotate through there, you know, in a difficult matchup, in a tagging facility, in some sort of game. And it's just one that I would be keeping tabs on across the season because we're really not looking at a strong defensive lineup of premiums. I think there's a few that stand out, but there's a couple at the top, like Attilia Lucas-Rodd, that I'm just not confident in. And so I just want to keep tabs on a lot of these high-scoring premiums. I think Bree Conan could be one of them this year that we're going to have in our sides at some point.
I think it's one where we'd like to see her drop in cash in the first month, become a rookie upgrade target. And then there's also a part of me that goes, I'd love it if Shannon Campbell stopped taking kick-ins. 42 compared to Dunn, 9, Sinead Davidson 6 and Bree Conan with only 4. If Bree Conan was getting even half of those, getting 20, you know, at least maybe 2 a week, then I would actually really like it. It just doesn't seem like Stasevich is that concerned by it. And to be honest, he's got a pretty close to a winning formula, so I doubt he's going to force the hand too much. I think it might take an injury down back to really boost it.
Yeah.
And it might take, I think it would take a few injuries possibly in the midfield to have Bree Conan be the player, particularly if it were to be, say, an Ali Anderson, and they would need the experience inside, then I think you'll get behind it.
Yeah. And look, I think every team ends up with their injury woes at some point. And right now, as far as I can tell, the Lions are perfectly healthy. So, you know, it'll come at some point, unfortunately. And when it does, it's just something we've got to keep an eye on.
Agreed.
All right, I think that's going to do us for the Brisbane Lions. Thank you so much for listening in. Go across to our Substack. You'll be able to find an article running through the Lions in a little bit more depth on their game plan, their ins and outs, and what we expect from them in the 2026 season. Otherwise, I'm Jono. You've been with me and my co-host Liam today. Thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow for our last Clubs and Days episode with North Melbourne, the reigning premiers.
See ya. Enjoy.
Bye.